I do solemnly swear that I will support the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the State of New York, and that I will faithfully discharge the duties of the office of Attorney and Counselor at Law, according to the best of my ability. Section 1 of Article 13 of the New York State Constitution, Oath of Office for a New Lawyer. A liar is full of oaths. From Le Menteur by Pierre Corneille. Part 1. August 2, 2002, Upstate New York. The child had been screaming for 20 minutes. She'd been fed, changed, winded, rocked, sung to, even held. Julie had read half a dozen books during the latter stages of her pregnancy, and that day she was attempting, for the fifth time, controlled crying. The book said to leave the baby to settle down on its own. This was an important part of sleep training, according to the author. It was tough, and Julie hadn't managed to last the recommended 2 minutes without going into the nursery and picking up the baby. In the hazy recesses of her memory, Julie could not recall ever being held by her mother. When her baby was born, she'd felt awkward at first. Holding that precious life in her hands felt wrong. It felt like she shouldn't be trusted with something so new, so pure, and so fragile. Julie pushed open the door to the nursery and began to make cooing sounds as she approached the cot. The child settled almost immediately. The blackout blinds were pulled down, and only the nightlight gave a muted glow to Julie's face. It was enough for the child to see her mother and hear her voice. Julie continued to hum, softly, smiling all the while as the baby gently drifted to sleep. Silently, Julie began retreating from the nursery, first making sure the baby monitor was switched on before she left and closed the door. The clock hit 10:05. Julie made her way to a makeshift studio in what would have been the utility room of the house. A half-finished canvas stood, accusingly, on an easel. Tucking the portable speaker from the baby monitor into her jeans, she looked around for her apron. She found it lying in a corner, put it on, and began to work. The first half hour went well. Then, as the shakes began, her brush strokes became stilted, heavy. Where before she could produce smooth, delicate lines, they became jittery and uneven. The tremors got worse, and she felt that familiar, guilty hunger. The day before, she had painted the red roof tiles in a single, smooth stroke, but now they became pitter-patter, awkward and skewed. Julie needed a fix. She took off her apron, threw it into the same corner of the studio where she'd found it earlier, and went in search of relief. Down the hallway, opposite the nursery. She reached the den, opened the door, closed and locked it behind her. A switch on the wall ignited the ceiling fan, and she set it to the highest speed and opened the windows. From the desk, she took a glass pipe and filled it with small white rocks that were kept in an old tobacco tin. She lit the pipe, inhaled. Another hit. That sweet saccharine ecstasy flowed through Julie's body. Her heartbeat quickened, and the wave of euphoria brought heat with it, like being smothered in a warm blanket. The sound of the front door closing startled her. At last, Scott was back. Crack made her sweat pretty much instantly, and she wiped her forehead. She placed the pipe on the study desk and opened the door to the hallway. But there was no one there. Her senses were muddled. Noises seemed both louder and muted. As if the source of the sounds were closer to her, but she was now underwater and listening through a fog of liquid. She listened, hard. And there it was again, a soft creak from the loose floorboard in the nursery. Julie crossed the hall and slowly opened the nursery door. Light from the hallway spilled into the room. A man stood in the nursery, a stranger dressed in black, standing over the cot. The room tilted. With the curtains drawn and the blackout blind pulled down for the child's nap, the man's features were not clear. The more her eyes became accustomed, the more of him she was able to see. He wore black gloves, shiny leather ones, and his face and head were somehow misshapen. She stepped into the nursery and saw that he was wearing a mask. The vision before her had been so arresting, so violating, so unreal and yet so visceral that at first she hadn't noticed the scent. It came to her now, strong, overwhelming, all too familiar. Gasoline. The entire room had been soaked in gasoline.